Welcome to the Back-Ass Words Podcast. We are the Back-Ass Words Boys. I'm Kyle. I use he, they pronouns. And joining me from our beautiful Colorado studio is Arden.
And I use he, him pronouns. Let's go. JFK.
Tonight, guys, gals, and MV pals, as Arden told you, and as you have seen from the episode title, I am going to be continuing on with part six of our, I'm pretty damn sure, never-ending series on JFK.
Oh my God, folks, it's part six. We just got into the conspiracy last week, and oh my actual God. I don't know if you folks have realized this, but this JFK series is just the series where Arden loses his mind in real time. And it is crazy.
It's been so much fun. It's been brain melting. It's been worldview changing for sure.
Absolutely. The only thing that has not changed, is the CIA.
It's definitely true. Ooh, another thing that has not changed, though, is we do list our sources at the top of every episode. And of course, the first stop on our research train is our good friend Wikipedia.
Because we stan Wikipedia on this motherfucking podcast.
You find yourself in the financial situation to do so, go ahead and throw them a few bucks. I'm sure they could use it.
Yeah, it's a good straw and cup deed.
Ooh, there we go.
Damn.
Hot. That was quick.
Yes.
I used their pages.
Oh, shit. It was philanthropic, dude.
That's what I was looking for. Oh, shit. See, you were so quick. You just slipped right past. I didn't even notice.
Yeah.
I used their pages on the John F. Kennedy assassination conspiracy theories and the badge man. I also used an article from spyscape.com titled Umbrella Man, The Strange JFK Protest and Echoes of a Conspiracy. And I used an article from the Washington Post called Umbrella Man at JFK Killing Was Heckling. And I also used an article from jfkfiles.com titled Secrets of a Homicide, Badge Man.
Oh my God. I'm so excited.
But guys, we still are not scholars and we will probably get some things wrong.
Absolutely. I don't even have a joke for this one. I'm way too excited.
We are also not linguists, so we are probably going to say some things wrong.
Absolutely.
Now, hold on to your asses, because things are about to get backwards.
It's JFK Part 6. Professor Kyle is here again. We missed him last week. I know you did, because I did. Even though he was there, it wasn't like there in the way that the JFK was here with us as well, you know? So now we're back. It's Part 6. Let's fucking go. It's more conspiracy. I'm way too excited. Let's do it.
Well, Arden is way too excited, so let's just get into it.
Yes.
Let's talk about the Umbrella Man.
Fuck. Oh, God. We really are getting into it. All right. Here we go.
The afternoon that President John F. Kennedy was shot was a sunny one. The skies were clear. There were no clouds in sight, despite rain forecasted that morning.
Mm.
But as the dust settles in the coming months and years, it became chillingly apparent that a man holding a black umbrella stood on the grassy knoll, precisely where shots may have rained on the presidential limousine, but he still had not been questioned by federal authorities. Investigators delving into the clues and theories meticulously analyzed television footage, photographs, and, of course, the silent frames of the 8mm Zapruder film, one of the most scrutinized pieces of film in all of history. The freeze frame of Umbrella Man is as hazy as the memories of gunfire. What is clear, however, is that it was 68 degrees Fahrenheit under sunny skies in Dallas, Texas, on November 22, 1963, yet a man held an open umbrella in direct breach of United States Security Services rules while he was standing just yards away from the most powerful man in the world.
I hate to bring up something so stupid.
Yes.
But I didn't think that the Umbrella Man was strange for having an umbrella until you just pointed out the circumstance that we found ourselves in. I was just like, oh, the Umbrella Man, he has a prop. This is very fun. Dude,
The umbrella was the identifying factor, not the weird part.
Yeah, not the weird part, exactly.
It's both, to be fair.
Yeah. Oh, God. I have a lot to learn, Professor, it would seem.
Well, several facts and theories emerged about the man. None conclusive, yet each fueling various conspiracy theories. Now, Arden, we have talked about on this show that the CIA operated an 18-year-long, $3 million super secret project to develop poisons, biochemical weapons, and devices such as dart guns to administer substances. CIA Director William Colby told the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence in 1975 that the program, codenamed MK Naomi, was halted in February of 1970 by presidential order.
I can back Professor Kyle up on this. We have talked about this on the show. This is very, very true. We do know this. This happened.
Weapons designer Charles Sensensi told the Senate Select Committee that it was possible in 1963 to fire an M1 projectile from either a walking cane or an umbrella.
Stop it. Stop.
The New York Times described Sensensi as a project engineer who developed weapons such as an electrical poison dart gun and a system to spread biological poison from a fluorescent bulb.
I really, really like where this is going, Kyle. I really like where this is going.
And we also know that two men standing close to the presidential motorcade on the north side of Elm Street began acting very strangely at the time JFK was gunned down. One pumped a black umbrella up in the air while the other waved his right arm.
What?
Federal authorities did not track down the umbrella man for 15 years.
Okay, hold on. So you're telling me that there's two motherfuckers who, when JFK gets shot, one of them is waving and the other one is waving his umbrella in the air?
Yes.
What? What strange behavior.
Opened it several times in the seconds leading up to the assassination.
And can I just say what I'm gathering from this, if I may just say, the reason why I said I really like where this is going is because he shot JFK with an umbrella, didn't he?
That is a theory, yeah.
Yes. Oh, my God. Yes. This is everything. This is everything to me right now.
Robert Cutler, a former United States Navy lieutenant, Massachusetts architect, and Harvard graduate, theorized that a man shot a dart into JFK's throat using his umbrella as a firing mechanism. Cutler drafted an illustration pointing out where the principal players in the assassination are thought to have been located, using the Zapruder film footage as a reference point and the trajectories of the bullets that struck JFK. Plenty of people dismissed Cutler's theory, but some researchers were more supportive. Was Umbrella Man offering a clandestine signal, a nod to co-conspirators hidden in the folds of Dealey Plaza? Or could he have been wielding a disguised weapon?
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. That's cool. All right.
Louis Stephen Witt says that it was neither when he finally stepped forward from the shadows in 1978. And Arden, I'm sure that you are guessing and wondering, who was Louis Witt?
Kyle, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm sitting here and I'm wondering and I'm thinking about and I'm concerned about who Louis Witt is.
Well, he was the Umbrella Man, of course.
He came forward?
Much against his better judgment, the Umbrella Man, turned up before the House Assassination Committee on September 25th, 1978. And he even brought his stupid umbrella.
Oh, my actual God. My man goes MIA for 15 years. They're looking for him. And then of his own accord strolls up and is just like, here's my umbrella. That was me.
Yep.
Crazy. Wow.
Anonymous, for nearly 15 years, despite his status in assassination lore, Louis Stephen Witt, aged 53, said that he was the person on the 22nd of November, 1963, his umbrella incongruously aloft in the sunshine when President Kennedy was shot. He said that he'd come to heckle the president that day and nothing more. He's been embarrassed about it ever since, which is why he never came forward. Witt testified, quote,
I wish I could remember who it was who put this idea into my head. I'm sure I would have taken the umbrella and clouded him with it sometime the last two weeks.
Seizing on pictures taken of him just a few feet from the presidential limousine when the fatal shots rang out, conspiracy theorists for years have made the Umbrella Man a sinister figure. Some suggested he was serving as a signalman for the real assassins, opening his umbrella as a signal to begin the gunfire.
Interesting.
Which I buy a little bit more than the gun in the umbrella thing, I think.
Well, yeah. I think so, too. Mostly because, again, what we learned from MKUltra is that the United States government was developing these. And a lot of these they were specifically using against Cuba at the time as well. So
yes.
I find it very difficult to believe that it would have entered the hands of a civilian. But here's what makes that a little bit more interesting, though. What if he's not a fucking civilian, dude? What if he's CIA fucking bullshit? Come
that
on.
That is very interesting.
You ever thought about it like that, Professor? I'm sure that you...
I certainly am. Chief Committee Counsel G. Robert Blakey said one critic has even contended that the umbrella may have contained an immobilizing dart gun or flechette, or even served as the actual murder weapon.
Man, that poison dart gun was really a one-hit wonder for them. They love to hit that.
They really do. Witt, who at the time of the assassination worked for the Rio Grande National Life Insurance Company in Dallas, said that he simply had been trying to annoy the president. He said that a friend of his, whose name he couldn't remember, had told him that the umbrella was a sore spot with the Kennedy family ever since the president's father, Joseph P. Kennedy, reference to the first episode, has served as a U.S. ambassador to Great Britain just before World War II. In those days, the umbrella was the symbol of British Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain, whose appeasement policy of peace in our time with Adolf Hitler had had Joseph Kennedy's strong support.
Okay. Hold, I need to process that for a second.
So basically, the Umbrella Man allegedly, I'm going to put a thick allegedly on here.
I feel like that's fair.
Was there
to
piss off JFK because his dad supported a policy 20 plus years before in a different country about something that JFK had never had anything to do with.
Yeah. JFK was too busy earning a Purple Heart in World War II and shit like that. You know what I mean?
Like,
and so he ended up fighting those people. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That would be like if your dad was like a high school art teacher. And when he was a high school art teacher, every year he had his students paint penguins for one of their projects.
Right.
And then 25 years later, some dude shows up at your job and throws a stuffed penguin in your face as a fuck you to your dad.
To you and your dad.
Yeah.
Fuck you, here's your fucking penguin. I made it at Build-A-Bear. It cost me $70. I worked really hard on it. You know what I mean?
What do you think of that, Arden?
Here's the thing. While Kyle was saying the first part of that paragraph, I started waving my finger because very much like how I feel about what the fuck Jack Ruby said about everything that had to do with him, I think this man, fucking Wit, what's his name? Louis? I think Louis is full of cap. I think Louis is lying to my face and he expects me to believe it. I think that's what's happening.
I think Louis is a hell of a lot more of a patsy than fucking Lee Harvey Oswald ever was. I'll tell you that right fucking now, dude.
Yeah, this guy didn't take a fucking bullet to the stomach, dude, after shooting JFK. Allegedly, hold on. Allegedly, we don't know yet. Hold on.
In any case, though, Wit allegedly said that he'd heard that the President Kennedy had been unsettled on a trip to Arizona by a group of people brandishing umbrellas, and he decided to try the same thing in Dallas on his lunch hour.
Did information really get around that? Well, I mean, I guess it is a 20-year-old piece of information. So I guess multiple people in different areas could know about that. Okay, that's not
just
unfair.
Like that's so obscure.
It is really obscure to me. Me too. I feel the same way. I find this to be very strange. Again, strange behavior.
Well, Wit said that he picked out the sparsely occupied grassy knoll in Dealey Plaza, sat down for a while, and then stood up as the motorcade began to pass, saying, quote,
"As I was moving forward, opening the umbrella, it was somewhere at this point that I heard the shots. My view of the car was blocked by the umbrella being opened, but within moments, I was aware that something had happened."
Stunned, he sat down on the curb while the motorcade sped off. A man next to him recalled that he kept muttering, "They done shot them folks." Wit went back to his nearby office and kept his heckling to himself. He said that to his knowledge, the authorities never sought him out, and so he never stepped forward, saying, quote,
"My line of thinking was I really had nothing to offer other than I had done a foolish thing."
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't know.
We got a little bit more info here. Maybe it'll turn yet.
All right.
Wit was finally forced into the limelight when Dallas newspapers published his picture as a part of an effort by the House Committee to determine his identity. Mm-hmm. Wit said that he confided in a friend, and then the secret was soon out.
Man.
Got ratted out, dude.
Dude, he held on to that for so long. He was like, "That's me." Because, like, there's no way. Because, like, he's lying that he didn't know that they were looking for him. They were obviously looking for him.
They were looking for literally anyone who had been in the plaza, and they made, like, public attempts to contact people.
Yeah.
He would have known.
So, he definitely would have known. So he's lying about that, I suspect, right? But it's like, damn, can you imagine holding on to that? It like they they're looking for you and you're just I gotta keep this one in the pocket. And then 15 years, you're like, I can finally trust someone.
Nope. Under subpoena, he brought himself and his big, clumsy black umbrella to Washington for the questioning. But he declined to demonstrate for the committee what he did with it in Dallas.
I'm drawing the line there. I'm sorry. I can't recreate it for y'all. It's much too embarrassing.
Chairman Lewis Stokes of Ohio insisted on having it opened to show that there was no dart gun inside. Committee staff member Cynthia Cooper picked it up and pointed it at the chairman.
Okay. Is it not possible that this is not the same fucking umbrella from 15 years ago? Has anyone thought about that? He's like, Arden, I brought the umbrella. I brought it. No, the fuck you didn't, dude. No.
Arden, not one person, not a single one in any of my research so far has brought up that perfectly, very, extremely valid fucking point.
They were just like, he came. We found him. Wow. Wowzers. Come on. What a government, dude.
Of the ether, he bro. Fucking appeared 15 years later.
Dude, come on.
In time for the House Select Committee on Assassination.
Dude. He was like, I brought it. I brought the actual umbrella. Dude. Oh, my God.
So Cynthia Cooper takes this very real actual umbrella that was there in Dealey Plaza and points it at Chairman Lewis Stokes. Stokes said, maybe you ought to turn that the other way.
Yeah, I'll say.
She did, and then she opened it so vigorously that the umbrella turned inside out with its metal ribs sticking up in the air. The hearing room naturally burst into laughter, but Witt was still chiding himself for the first and only demonstration that he ever took part in, saying, quote,
I think if the Guinness Book of Records had a category of people being in the wrong place at the wrong time doing the wrong thing, I would be number one. I can't.
What do you think of the umbrella, man, Arden?
I can't accept this. This is... Such a fuck. Dude, I have been lied to for 6 episodes straight of a podcast by these people. Not by you. You're just telling me what they say. These people are lying to me for 6 episodes. I can't believe it, dude. It is such an interesting circumstance. It's so weird. And it is such an obscure thing to do to mock the president. Like, yeah. It's not adding up. You know?
And the thing that blows my mind is so most everybody was just like, sounds sick.
That's fucking awesome.
That's fucking umbrella, man, right there, dude. And that's the umbrella. No questions.
Our monkey brain was just like, oh my God, a bow to put on this. Fucking finally.
Like literally, though. That's what it was.
Oh, I hate that. Oh, that is so frustrating, dude. Dude, y'all fumbled so hard. Oh my God.
In the film, in all of the images that he is in the plaza that day, whoever had that umbrella is acting fucking sussy, dude. Like, he's acting weird. And for this fucking patsy to come forward 15 years later to be like, oh, yeah, it was me. Like, no, totally no, it wasn't. Bro. Shut up. You're wrong.
Bro, and here's the thing. Oh, my God. Have you ever considered this? I'm sure that you have. Can you imagine a world in which the CIA murdered JFK, and then they were like, holy shit, people will not shut the fuck up about this umbrella man. Let's send an umbrella man. Let's just send a guy.
Literally.
Dude, like, get that could have totally happened.
Yeah.
Come on.
Like, with everything that we know about the CIA, do we think that is even remote? That was probably idea number two.
Dude,
with
like,
the first one being, we should just dose anyone who asks about the Umbrella Man with LSD. Like,
please, like the listeners at home, like, please understand and like try to understand that, like, the CIA's power is more than you could imagine. Like, I know that it sounds crazy to be saying, like, they probably asked someone to go do that because. You imagine yourself asking someone to do something insane, they're not going to do it. It's because it's you asking them. The CIA asks you to do something crazy. There's like a real legitimate power and a real legitimate threat behind that too. And that is something that is so fucking important when we talk about the CIA. Like, I'm sorry. I know you're listening. Fuck you. Like, that's what you do. You have an insurmountable amount of power. That's how this works. That's how this happens.
Dude, knowing the CIA and knowing how spooks fucking think, someone probably fucking volunteered.
Yeah.
To do this.
They were like, it would be sick if I was the Umbrella Man.
Yeah. They probably had to have like auditions for it because so many people wanted to do it, you know?
This smells so fucking shitty, dude. I smell it, dude. It's bad. I reject this, is what I'm saying.
Well, the only thing the committee couldn't quite shoot down was the man on the grassy knoll. Dr. Bob Hunt, a photo enhancement expert from the University of Arizona, said sophisticated techniques have brought out the image of an individual behind a retaining wall who may or may not have a gun in his hand.
Is this the other guy that he was standing next to?
This is the badge man.
Okay.
We're segueing.
I'm listening.
Honestly, I found like two sentences about the dude who was standing next to the Umbrella Man. There was like nothing on him. So
gotcha.
The Badge Man is a figure that is purportedly present within the Mary Mormon photograph of the assassination. Conspiracy theorists have suggested that this figure is a sniper firing a weapon at the president from the grassy knoll. Although a reported muzzle flash obscures much of the detail, the Badge Man has been described as a person wearing a police uniform, which is where he gets his name from.
Okay.
The Mormon photograph was taken a fraction of a second after the fatal bullet struck Kennedy's head. It was analyzed by the House Select Committee on Assassinations, but no evidence of hidden figures was found. In 1983, however, Gary Mack, the curator of the Sixth Floor Museum, which we have referenced several times over the course of this series, obtained a higher quality copy of the photograph. Upon enhancement, Mack noted what he believed to be the Badge Man in the shadowed background. This alleged second gunman has appeared in several conspiracy theories considering the assassination of President Kennedy. Among photographic experts, the consensus is that the image lacks the resolution to determine whether or not the Badge Man is a human figure. The reported Badge Man is not present in any other photographs of the assassination and, more importantly, was not seen by any witnesses.
Zero, huh?
Not a one.
There were a lot of people there.
Former Los Angeles County Deputy District Attorney Vincent Bulgosi criticized the Badge Man interpretation, and analyst Dale K. Myers has argued that it is not an actual person due to proportional discrepancies.
Yeah.
It has even been suggested that the figure is actually an optical distortion from a Coca-Cola bottle or simply a merging of different background elements.
Hey, that actually kind of makes sense because I don't know how we edited this, but me and Kyle just looked at that photo and we looked at the enhanced version of the photo as well. And then we looked at a colorized version of it as well. And there is one figure that kind of does look like it could be a Coca-Cola bottle.
Yeah,
it's very true.
And one important thing to note about this photograph is that the Mormon photo was a Polaroid print, right? So it's pretty small. It was 2.5 by 3.25 inches. Mm. And that included the 0.375 inch white border that surrounds the entire photograph. So it's even smaller.
Right.
And the portion of the image that contains all three figures is even smaller, only a quarter of a square inch in size, and the figures are even smaller than that, with the head of the Badge Man figure measuring 1/69th of an inch wide.
Damn.
We're talking about a couple of pixels on a digital photograph, right?
Oh, boy. Oh boy, this is where it gets saucy, folks. I mean, oh my God, we are really going for it right here.
During the assassination, Dallas resident Mary Mormon took a series of photographs with her Polaroid camera. She captured images of the presidential limousine, several other close witnesses, including Abraham Zapruder while he was filming, and two Dallas police motorcycle escorts, and the grassy knoll beside the motorcade route. The badge man is reportedly visible in Mormon's fifth and most famous photo of the area, taken almost exactly at the moment of the fatal shot. As you remember, Arden, the fatal shot hits the president in frame 313 of the Zapruder film.
Mm-hmm.
The photo has been calculated to have been captured between Zapruder film's film frames 315 and 316, less than 1/6 of a second after President Kennedy was shot.
Because once again, the Zapruder camera was filming at 18 frames per second, my friends.
Correct. In the immediate aftermath.
Okay, I'm so sorry. That's crazy. She got a photo right there. Dude, it's like it's still
like that's
happening.
Faster. Yeah, that's faster than human reaction time. That is purely coincidence.
Like JFK isn't dead yet in that picture. You know what I mean? The light bulb is almost off.
Yeah, it's dimming.
Holy
like,
shit.
You know when you turn off an old like CRT TV and it glows for a second?
Yeah.
After you turn it off? Yeah. That's what's going on with JFK in that picture.
Oh boy. Man, what a happenstance.
Crazy. In the immediate aftermath of the shooting, police officers and spectators ran to the grassy knoll from where some witnesses believed the shots had originated, but no sniper was found.
In the immediate aftermath?
Like, that was first thing.
Wow.
People ducked, and then they ran to check the grassy knoll, right?
Damn.
The Warren Commission concluded that Lee Harvey Oswald was the sole shooter and that he had shot Kennedy from the Texas School Book Depository building.
It was in less than 24 hours. It really wasn't that big of a deal. It doesn't matter.
Conspiracy theorists, however, speculate that there was an assassin behind the wooden picket fence on the top of the grassy knoll.
And can I just say that if there were to be a shooter on the grassy knoll, which I am open to, that probably is a fair position for them to be in. That's a pretty good vantage point.
It is. It is. The angles don't quite work, but it is.
I mean, you know, it certainly doesn't angles, help with the magic bullet theory.
The angles of the shots that hit don't work, I guess I should say.
Yeah.
And
we'll
for
get
her
into
part,
the autopsy.
We're going to get into the autopsy next week. And for her part, Mormon told Larry Sabato that she did not see anything out of the ordinary behind the fence and that she remained unconvinced that a second shooter was revealed in her photograph.
She doesn't even buy it. She's like, no.
Mormon's photograph was not included in the Warren Commission's 1964 report or its supporting documents. Mormon stated that she had been invited to provide testimony to the commission, but asked for a postponement after injuring her ankle and was not contacted again.
Damn. She was like, can you just like wait? I just need my ankle to heal up. And they were like, no, we don't need to talk to you anymore.
Just ghosted her. Yeah.
Yeah.
In the late 1970s, the HSCA, which concluded that there was a second gunman on the grassy knoll based on now discredited acoustic evidence, determined that the photo of interest deemed this the photo of interest to its investigation. With the unaided eye, the HSCA photographic evidence panel could not find any figures in the shadowed background. So the HSCA then sent the Mormon photograph to the Rochester Institute of Technology for enlargement, enhancement, and analysis. RIT. The RIT report found no evidence of human forms anywhere in the background. And the specific area behind the stockade fence was deemed to be so underexposed that it was impossible to glean any information from it. The HSCA concluded that if the Mormon photo did not contain images that might be construed to be a figure behind the fence, it would be a troubling lack of corroboration for the acoustical analysis.
Mm.
The examined photo was the original copy, which had greatly degraded by that point. These older Polaroids, specifically this type of film, had a sort of coating top film that you had to put on top of the photographs to preserve them and finish processing them. And there was a delay in getting that film onto this specific photograph, which made it degrade a lot faster. Right.
Damn. That doesn't help. That's for sure.
It does not.
Nope.
In 1983, Gary Mack obtained an 8x10-inch UPI copy of the Mary Mormon photograph of higher quality than the degraded original. It was taken from some of the first scans, so it was a higher quality than the original at that point, right?
Right, not right, right, right.
The original. That's fucking impossible.
Yeah. right.
As the curator of the sixth floor museum at Dealey Plaza, Mack was described by skeptic Vincent Bugosi as one of the few respected Kennedy assassination conspiracy theorists.
Wow.
After noting what he thought was a human face in the shadowed background, Mack contacted Jack White, a friend and darkroom technician, to study the photograph. Upon enhancement, they identified an individual wearing a uniform, possibly that of a Dallas police officer, standing behind the stockade fence, with his face obscured by a muzzle flash, but with a small, bright object visible on his chest. They interpreted this to be a badge, hence, Badge Man.
Now, if I had a tinfoil hat, I would be putting it on right now, because what I'm about to say is batshit fucking crazy. But isn't it interesting how we had a whole episode where we talked about, you know, a guy who not only had connections with one group of people, but also had connections with another group of people. How interesting would that be? You know, if I was just throwing shit out in the dark with my tinfoil hat on, you know what I mean? If I was just throwing it, you know?
And Arden.
Professor Kyle does have their tinfoil hat on, by the way.
Which Arden? Arden. Arden. Which Dallas police officer do we talk about in this story?
The one are you talking about? I hope I'm not wrong. Are you talking about the one that got killed?
J.D.
Lee Oswald.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I got it right. That might have been him.
Some people think so. And that would put a nice bow on it for the CIA, wouldn't it?
Kind of puts a bow on Lee Oswald killing him, but like not really.
I mean, it puts a better bow than having a second gunman out in the world alive, right?
Ooh, then they killed both of them. The CIA used and killed both.
The CIA put fucking Oswald in the school book depository, had Tippit shoot the president, and then had Oswald kill Tippit. And then had Jack Ruby kill Oswald.
And then had Jack Ruby die of bone cancer.
I think that one was just convenient.
I mean, he did say that they injected him with shit, which is a crazy thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, based off everything you just said, now I want this to be real, but I have to be honest because I've been holding it in the whole time. Dude, the picture, sorry, folks. Man. Come on. Like, it's so bad. You can't even fucking see anything, dude.
Oh, no. And we're gonna get into that right now, actually. Mack, White, and other conspiracy theorists have attempted to connect Badge Man with the claims of Gordon Arnold. When analyzing the photos, Mack initially considered whether the figure may in fact be Arnold, a soldier who claimed to be on the grassy knoll with a movie camera. Mm. Arnold, who first came forward in 1978, claimed that he had filmed the assassination and that a police officer had confiscated his film after the shooting. Some theorists claim that this officer was also the Badge Man. Arnold, though, is not visible in any photographs taken of the area, which Bugosi calls conclusive photographic proof that Arnold's story was fabricated.
You want to know what this sounds like to me? Babushka lady. They took my film.
Exactly.
Shut up, dude.
White continued experimenting with the Mormon photograph, though. And in the mid-1980s, he produced a new colorized version, enhanced in contrast and brightness, which he claimed revealed the policeman figure in higher clarity. This is the one we just looked at.
Mm-hmm.
In 1988, White also claimed that a man wearing a white shirt and possibly a hard hat is visible behind the Badge Man. He called him the Backup Man.
Yes, yes, I love that. Badge Man and his sidekick, Backup Man. That's so good.
The shittiest superheroes ever.
Where is Marvel? Where is DC? How have you not jumped on this?
There is a comic about this, actually.
No fucking shot. You're lying.
Arden, have you ever heard of The Umbrella Academy?
Yes. Are you talking about the Netflix show?
Yes. Did you ever watch season 2 of The Umbrella Academy by any chance?
Uh-uh.
It is 100% about this.
No.
He is the Umbrella Man. Yes. The
Umbrella Man.
Yes.
The Umbrella Man.
Yes.
The more real one of the conspiracy theories we're talking about right now, may I say.
Yeah. Yeah. The fucking, what's his name, is the Umbrella Man.
I see.
Yes. And then all of them are the different, yes.
Oh.
Yes.
I didn't need to watch 2 seasons of the show for it to make sense and for me to know everything there is about it to talk about it critically and talk like I know what I'm talking about because I'm a really smart guy. I'll ride that one.
Many conspiracy theories claim that Kennedy was killed by several shooters positioned throughout Dealey Plaza. The Badge Man is often said to have fired the fatal headshot from the grassy knoll. The 1988 British documentary series, The Men Who Killed Kennedy, which features White's work, proposes that the Badge Man was Lucien Sarti, a French national and alleged contract killer. Other conspiracy theorists have suggested that the Badge Man is none other than J.D. Tippit, the Dallas police officer who was killed by Oswald shortly after Kennedy's assassination.
Ding, 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 ding.
Regarding these claims, Mack clarified his stance in 2006, saying, quote,
I've never said that the Badge Man was the Knoll assassin, but I have said it is a possibility. That's all.
Such a cop-out, dude.
Dude, like, he's like, no.
I said he could be, not that he was.
Dude, come on. I've clarified it about 5 decades later. Let me come out once and for all.
In an attempt to validate the Badge Man, Mack had the photograph analyzed by third parties, including experts at the iTech Corporation, the JPL, Jet Propulsion Laboratory at the California Institute of Technology, and fucking MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. The consensus is that the photograph lacks the resolution to determine whether the Badge Man is a human figure, which I don't need a fucking degree in photograph fucking investigation to tell you that.
Bro, they're trying so hard. They're like, please, please tell me. Please, he's there. I know he's there. Come on.
Photographic. Oh my God. Photographic expert Jeffrey Crowley concluded that the badge man was not a person, but rather disparate background elements.
Yeah! Fuck yeah!
Bulgosi noted that the discrepancies with the badge man photograph. He argued that the man must have been unusually tall for his badge to have been seen above the 5-foot-tall fence, and that his eyes are not near the hypothetical scope of his sniper rifle, as would be expected. He's fucking no-scoping the present.
Brother. Oh my God. Dude. Dude. Absolutely domes him, bro. Holy
Bulgosi
shit.
Also emphasized that Mac stated that he has never confidently identified the presence of a weapon due to the alleged muzzle flash. Mac so conceded that the badge man has not been identified in any other photographs of the assassination, and furthermore, the badge man was not seen by Grassy Knoll witness Lee Bowers or Zapruder, and no witness reported seeing a Dallas police officer anywhere near where the badge man allegedly stood.
You fucking tell him, Professor Kyle.
I'll tell him.
Fuck yeah, dude. Fuck this. I'm sorry. Fuck this one.
Researcher and computer animator Dale Myers has argued that the measurements of the Grassy Knoll area require the alleged figure to have been in an impossible position to fire a weapon at the motorcade, saying, if the badge man were truly a human being of average height and build, he would have been located 32 feet behind the fence line and have been elevated 4.5 feet above the ground. An unreasonable and untenable firing position.
You know what? That is true. And I feel like I should take back what I said earlier now that I know the circumstance. Like, the angle is kind of a good angle to be at to shoot the president, but the placement of where the shooter allegedly was, of where Badge Man allegedly was, is way too close. Someone would have seen him, you know?
He also states that the retaining wall would have blocked the Badge Man's bullet. The fucking angles don't line up. It's close. It's really close.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades, not sniper rifles.
Again, don't know how we're editing this, but Kyle and I just looked at the photo of the vantage point that Badge Man would have allegedly had at JFKfiles.com, and it would have hit the wall, folks. And here's the thing. This is what I mentioned to Kyle. If Badge Man was allegedly there and did allegedly try to take this shot, there would have been something that damaged the wall. There would have been something that happened to the wall that would have indicated that someone was there. And there is nothing that indicates that at this point, my friends.
And maybe one final nail in this coffin. A Coca-Cola bottle is visible in contemporaneous photos resting on the pergola wall near the badge man area.
Yeah. Yep.
Fucking got Coke him. Bottle.
Fucking got him.
There have been hundreds of books written purporting that a Coke bottle killed the president of the United States.
And again, if you go look at the colorized photo of this, again, you can find that at jfkfiles.com. At least that's where we're seeing them. And the figure on the left-hand side of this photo definitely looks like it could have been a Coca-Cola bottle, my friends.
Coca-Cola bottle.
It definitely was.
And it sucks because I want this one to be true so bad.
This one is pretty almost fucking fire.
Yeah. Fucking almost as bad as Mac wanted fucking this photo to be real, but like, yeah,
for real,
it's just not. And the reason I wanted to kind of wrap up this section of this series with this person, with the badge man, is because it's bullshit, right? And
yeah,
there is just so much of it surrounding this case. There is mountains of bullshit. And the real problem with it is these mountains of bullshit are built on foundations of a lot of words and a lot of big words said very fast. These people are very good at convincing people of their bullshit, right? Because they're convinced of their bullshit. But that doesn't make it not bullshit.
Well, and I think it's important to note, particularly with this conspiracy, but probably with a lot of the conspiracy theories that we've talked about on the show, and also as it pertains to JFK, they get scrutinized to shit. I mean, how many people looked at this goddamn photo at the 1/64th of an inch of that photo that was alleged to have Badge Man in there, and it just was not fucking there?
No.
And
if there was something there, the level that this was scrutinized at and the number of people that were scrutinizing it, something would have been seen. And if you showed me like just that colorized photo, like just that colorized enhanced version, I would buy it.
Yep. Me too.
But then you show me the versions leading up to where they got there, and no. Absolutely not. Sorry.
No. You definitely filled that in. You scribbled that in. You know what I mean?
You're coloring outside the lines a little bit there, bud.
Mm-hmm. Because, dude, it is nothing in the black and white photo. I urge you folks to go look at that and tell us what you think. Because I, as far as I'm concerned, there's nothing.
Yeah.
Except a Coca-Cola bottle.
So speaking of bullshit, I wanted to kind of round out this episode with a couple more. with a couple more theories that don't quite hold as much water as the ones we're going to be talking about in the next couple of weeks. Some aspects of these might come up in these theories, but these theories as a whole, I personally do not put any weight in. But I still wanted to address because they're kind of interesting and kind of fun.
I'm very excited. Let's get into rounding out our bullshit with more bullshit.
We're going to do a bit of a lightning round here, all right?
All right.
Former Secret Service agent Abraham Bolden's The Echo from Dealey Plaza, published in 2008, and Kevin James Shea's Death of the Rising Sun from 2017 detail plots that occurred shortly before Kennedy's trip to Dallas in 1963 in Chicago and Florida, respectively. Within the Secret Service during these chaotic months, rumors were flying, quote, about Cuban dissidents and right-wing Southerners who were stalking Kennedy for a chance to kill him. The security threat in Chicago on November 2nd of 1963 involved former Marine Thomas Arthur Vallée, who was arrested after the police found two M1 rifles, a handgun, and 2,500 rounds of ammunition in his apartment. A high-powered rifle was also confiscated from another suspected conspirator in Chicago shortly before Kennedy's trip there was canceled, Bolden said. Authorities also cited similar threats in Kennedy's Tampa, Florida, and Miami, Florida visits on November 18th of the same year. And those are real, but like people try and tie that into Lee Harvey Oswald and being like he was the makeup. No. It's just not every, while Kennedy was very liked, the people who didn't like him really did not like him.
And we talked about that with the mafia as well. It's like he was one of the highest rated presidents of all time, but because of many things, including his brother, Bobby Kennedy, the people, very much like what Professor Kyle is saying, the people who did not like the Kennedys fucking hated them. despised them, dude.
Mark North's act of treason, the role of J. Edgar Hoover in the assassination of President Kennedy, published 1991, implicates the FBI director in the assassination.
Why?
North documents that Hoover was aware of threats against Kennedy by organized crime before 1963 and suggests that he failed to take proper action to prevent the assassination. North also charges Hoover with failure to work adequately to uncover the truth behind Kennedy's murder.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I would have to say that I would like to read this book because that sounds like a fire book.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I want to read all of these, dude.
And this kind of implicates the mafia?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of implicates that the mafia was trying to look for a way to at least hurt JFK, if nothing else.
And the FBI might have just kind of looked the other way.
I wonder why the FBI would look the other way. Are the FBI and the CIA fucking bros, dude?
I mean, no, but...
and all that shit?
No, but they're, you know, cards of the same suit, I would say.
Fair enough. Interesting one. That one's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Mortal Error, The Shot That Killed JFK, published in 1992 by Bonar Menninger, alleges that while Oswald did attempt to assassinate JFK, and he did succeed in wounding him, the fatal shot was accidentally fired by Secret Service agent George Hickey, who was riding in the Secret Service follow-up car directly behind the presidential limousine. This theory alleges that after the first two shots were fired by Oswald, the motorcade sped up while Hickey was attempting to respond to Oswald's shots, and he lost his balance and accidentally pulled the trigger of his AR-15, and the shot fatally hit JFK in his fucking dome. Hickey's testimony, of course, says otherwise. He said, quote,
"At the end of the last shot, I reached to the bottom of the car and picked up the AR-15 rifle, cocked and loaded it, and turned to the rear."
So he's like, no, I was facing the other way.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
George Hickey actually sued Menninger in April of 1995 for what he had written in Mortal Error.
Mm.
The case was dismissed as its statute of limitations had worn out.
Mm.
But the theory received public attention in 2013 when it was supported by Colin McLaren's book and documentary titled JFK, The Smoking Gun. It is worth noting that no Secret Service agent is reported as having fired any weapons that day.
Also, like, I don't want to get...
Of course, if the fucking Secret Service accidentally shot the president, they would probably cover that up and say that no weapons were fired that day. But
here's the thing. I see two things with this. One, the first is that if this did happen on accident, that would have been way more obvious.
Yes.
You can't... Dude, my man accidentally trips and shoots the president, like... We're not that stupid. We can piece two and two together there. This is a closed case. There's no six-part series on this. You know what I mean? Like,
no, people would have fucking noticed that.
They would have seen that.
This would have been a one-part episode about that one time a president actually got killed by the Secret Service on accident. Like,
which would be a crazy story, by the way.
I'm not trying to discount that at all.
But also, the other thing is that, like, he does say that he cocks the rifle and he loads it, and then he turns the other way. And, like, that makes a lot more sense with where he's at. You know what I mean? Because the shot would have also came from behind him at that point in the Zapruder film. So I
think
that...
Which would be towards the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository, if we are getting into it. But...
Mm-hmm. And also, again, I don't want to get too in the weeds on this, but, like, I know that there's something, and I think it's with the police as well, but I think, if I remember correctly, that in the military, like, if you shoot weapons, you have to report
Yes.
How many shots were discharged from your weapon? And yes. I don't know the military practices in 1963, but I would imagine that there's something there in place.
Yeah. I mean, like we said, we have reports that there were, or we know that there were no reports of the Secret Service firing any weapons that day.
But I guess to your point that you made earlier, I guess if they did, they could have covered that up. You know, it's government investigating government, you know.
Mm-hmm. Who Shot JFK? A Guide to the Major Conspiracy Theories from 1993 by Bob Callahan and Mark Zingaleri explores some of the more obscure theories regarding JFK's murder, such as the Coca-Cola theory.
What?
According to this theory, suggested by the editor of an organic gardening magazine, Oswald killed JFK due to mental impairment stemming from an addiction to refined sugar, as evidenced by his need for his favorite beverage immediately after the assassination. He did ask for a Coke in prison. So, you know, obviously that's why he killed the president.
So he was addicted to sugar.
I mean, it's the same thing as Ted Bundy's fucking Twinkie tangent that he goes on, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like...
absolute horseshit.
It is absolute horseshit. And I mean, like, you needed a Coke so bad that you brought your fucking gun in a paper bag to work that day and then told your coworkers that it was curtain rods? Like, what do you mean?
Yeah. Okay.
What the fuck? What? What are you saying? They're like a nickel back then, too. You step off.
Seriously. Passport to Assassination from 1993 by Oleg M. Nekrasponko, the Soviet consular official and highly placed KGB officer who met with Oswald in Mexico City in 1963. He was afforded the unique opportunity to interview Oswald about his goals, including his genuine desire for a Cuban visa. His conclusions were that, one, Oswald killed Kennedy due to extreme feelings of inadequacy versus his wife's professed admiration for JFK, and two, that the KGB never sought intelligence information from Oswald during his time in the USSR, as they did not trust his motivations.
Wow, he really came for him. He was like,
Oswald's just a fucking cuck.
He was getting cucked by JFK, and he felt inadequate because he hadn't done anything important, and so he had to go do something important so that the KGB would want him. What? What? Bro! Dude! Wow.
Norman Mailer's Oswald's Tale, An American Mystery, published in 1995, concludes that Oswald was guilty, but holds that the evidence may point to a second gunman on the grassy knoll who purely by coincidence was attempting to kill JFK at the exact same time as Oswald.
Best theory. Absolute fucking best theory. This is the real one. This is the one that actually happened, folks. I love this already.
He said that if there was indeed another shot, it was not necessarily fired by a conspirator of Oswald's. Such a gun could have belonged to another lone killer or to a conspirator working for some other group altogether.
Fabulous. Absolutely flawless fucking theory, dude. I buy it. I love that. I want, oh my God. That's a musical comedy waiting to happen. Oh my God.
David Rorn's The Zapruder Film concludes that JFK's head wound and his throat and back wounds were caused by in and through shots originating from the grassy knoll. Three shots were fired from three different angles, and none of them were from the sixth floor window of the Texas School Book Depository.
Six?
Mm-hmm.
That's six shots? Oh my God. Wow. Okay, that's a biggie.
Described by the Associated Press as, quote, one of the strangest theories, end quote, Hugh McDonald's appointment in Dallas stated that the Soviet government contracted with a rogue CIA agent only called Saul to have Kennedy killed. McDonald said that he worked for the CIA on assignment for $100 a day, which is about $1,000 a day in 2023.
Damn. Good
and
shit.
And he met Saul at the agency's headquarters after the Bay of Pigs invasion.
Oh, that's bad. CIA agent being like, after Bay of Pigs, going to go meet someone named Saul. Mm. They were like, we better call Saul and better go meet him. The Bay of Pigs just happened.
According to McDonald, his CIA mentor told him that Saul was the world's best assassin. McDonald stated that after the assassination, he recognized the man's photo in the Warren Commission report and eventually tracked him to a London hotel in 1972. McDonald stated that Saul assumed he too was a CIA agent and confided in him that he had shot Kennedy from a building on the other side of the street from the Texas School Book Depository.
What? He alleges that he has a confession from someone who shot JFK? Oh. Yep. Oh, boy. No.
And last one for the night, I think. Judith Vary Baker claims that during the summer of 1963, just before the assassination, she had an adulterous affair with Lee Harvey Oswald in New Orleans while working with him, on a CIA bioweapons project to kill Fidel Castro.
It's MK Ultra!
According to John McAdams, Baker presents a classical case of pushing the limits of plausibility too far. So,
They were exploding conch shells in a fish tank, just getting ready to bomb Castro with LSD.
Just taking baths in fucking shellfish toxin.
Yeah, dude.
Doing the fucking, what is it, dirty dancing? They're like, psh.
Pull the cord.
Yeah. Yeah,
exactly.
Flash wow. Dance. Flash dance, not dirty dancing. What am I saying?
Either way, excellent.
So, we finally have our cast of characters, our rogues gallery, if you will. And we have touched bases on just a few of the theories out there. So now that we have spent 6 weeks laying the groundwork, we can finally, oh my God, finally dive into the meat of what happened by whose orders on November 22nd, 1963. And that, my little sugar addicts, was episode 6 of JFK.
Wow. I need a Coca-Cola after this one, I tell you what. And may I just say, before we go any further, Professor Kyle, my dear friend, phenomenal work on this outline. Oh, my God.
Thank you.
Oh, my actual God. I have learned so much, in the course of tonight's episode. And you did phenomenal work, my friend. Thank you for preparing this outline.
Thank you. I had the best person to share it with. So,
thanks.
Thank you for listening.
Okay. Now that we've got all that bullshit out of the way, the fuck was this outline, bro? Okay. Let's just take it from the top, shall we?
Yeah.
And I know that we're not doing a back-assward stance, but can I just say that the Umbrella Man, that this is some of the craziest shit I've heard. This is absolutely fucking wild. And I'm going to say something a little crazy, and maybe my mind will change on this. I do think that it's way more plausible. If I'm comparing the Badge Man and the Umbrella Man, it's way more plausible that the Umbrella Man shot JFK.
Oh,
and I don't even think that he shot him. I just think that if someone else is going to shoot him out of the two people who would be quote unquote the most likely to shoot him that I learned about tonight, I think that the Umbrella Man has a way better shot with his umbrella gun, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And
I mean, whether or not he's shot, I think the possibility of him being some kind of signal is also extreme. Like, that's likely. Those
that's
shots
way
came
more
in
real.
Such close succession. How else would they have done that unless they were like using radios? And that's not a very secure way to communicate the assassination of the president of the United States of America.
Nope.
But you know what can't be accidentally listened on?
An umbrella.
A signal that you predetermined ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. And
given
can I
by
just
someone.
Exactly. And can I just say, pairing with what you told us last week in JFK Part 5, that so if there were three shots fired from the Texas School Book Depository, which there are three shell casings on the ground, right? Right. We talked about last week how motherfucking fast those shots came, because the Zapruder film is 18 frames per second, and those shots come in so goddamn fast. And Lee Harvey Oswald is holding a bolt action rifle.
Yeah, just over 2.5 seconds between shots.
Which is crazy fast, may I say.
You could get off two shots that quickly with a bolt action rifle. To do it with any kind of accuracy, no.
Crazy.
Absolutely not.
Because you got him in the neck and then you domed him. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Allegedly.
Yeah. And yeah, no. Just no.
And so it is interesting to bring up the Umbrella Man as a signal guy, because I do think that that is the most likely scenario. However,
yes,
to go back to what I was losing my mind over, how the fuck did no one be like, this can't be the Umbrella from 15 years ago, dude? Like, come on. Perfect CIA plant. Because who's making the heart attack guns and the fucking umbrellas? We know that they made umbrellas that can shoot projectiles. We know that.
We know for a fact that that is a thing.
Umbrellas, specifically. Who is to say that the Umbrella Man is not planted by the CIA, who I am still convinced has the most reason to kill JFK in this instance, at this point in the series?
That's where I'm sitting so far.
Okay, that's pretty much my feelings on the Umbrella Man, Kyle.
Yeah, the idea of the Umbrella Man in Dealey Plaza, fascinating. Mm. The Umbrella Man that we met, Louis Stephen Witt, it's just so obviously a lie.
Dude, my man is full of cap. He was an intern at the CIA who raised his hand and said, I'll be the Umbrella Man. I'm running with that. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, Louis Witt is full of shit. All right. Now for the Badge Man. I mean, it can't overstate this. It's not fucking real. That picture has nothing. But what I will say is that this does kind of put a wrench in something for me, and I hate to say it, but it really does put a wrench in the multiple shooters. All
right. It does.
Unless we really are going to go with Umbrella Man having an umbrella gun. If we are really going with that theory, that's the most plausible shooter theory so far.
Standing close to him.
Exactly.
That would have absolutely known if a gun went off that close to them.
Exactly. So this kind of puts a wrench in it for me. I don't know what other conspiracy theories we're going to get into, but that probably would have been the closest to a good vantage point, unless you were like farther away and you were way better at shooting the gun. Like, that's probably the only place it could have happened. And if that's not the answer, then I don't know what is. And again, I urge you folks to go look at JFK Files, the website that we were looking at, and look at the trajectory of where that bullet would have went if it was shot from there. It doesn't work.
It just doesn't.
And it would have damaged the wall.
I wish it could have worked. It would make this so much simpler.
It really would.
It doesn't.
No. It actually makes things a lot more complicated.
It really does, which is why we added some more episodes this fucking week. Good Lord.
Because again, like, dude, like we talked about it for so much last week. Like, How do you get 7 wounds from 2 to allegedly 3 bullets? Yeah. How? Well, and how do you get 7 wounds from one of
bullet.
Those 2 or 3 bullets?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it lends itself to have you believe that there are more shooters because there are more injuries. That's yeah. what's crazy. Because if someone was shooting from the right of the motorcade, that could have hit Governor Connolly's wrist and his left thigh.
Yeah.
That would
track. 100%.
The magic yeah. bullet theory makes no sense. So if Badge Man isn't the second shooter, I just don't know who it is yet.
Yeah.
The other...
And, I mean, the one thing I can say in, like, support of the Badge Man hypothesis, I guess, is that when the Mormon photograph was analyzed, it was found that the area where the Badge Man would be standing is too dark to have any kind of development. So even if there was someone standing there, the photograph would not show it.
And I think that that's fair to say. I think that that's yeah. fair to say. It's not conclusive that someone was there, but it's also not conclusive that someone was not there.
Exactly. And that's the entire thing with this fucking conspiracy, dude.
That's so dissatisfying.
Yeah.
I do not like that. I will say that out of the Rogue Gallery, I love the Coca-Cola theory. That one is so fire, dude. Like, he's just itching for a Coca-Cola.
He's just so frustrated. It's 100% the idea that there just happened to be 2 assassination plots going off at the exact same time.
That one is fucking
down to
fire.
The second. Like, exactly.
That one is so good. The same frame of the Zapruder film caught 2 assassination attempts at the exact same time. Like, crazy. I also really like the Better Call Saul theory, yeah. where they were like, I gotta hook you up with the best assassin in the world for this job.
I'm so good at doing research that the best assassin in the world thought I was CIA.
Dude.
Come on, dude.
Dude. And I also just love the idea that Lee Harvey Oswald is messing with conch shells with this random lady trying to explode.
Just fucking and making toxins, dude.
Dude, for real. Just trying to figure out how can we get LSD into Fidel Castro's body. Like, that's all that we need, really.
Well, thank you so much for listening to the podcast, everybody.
Thank you so much. It's part 6 of JFK. I am having the time of my absolute life with this series. It is so wonderful to be here. Kyle's doing such a great job. You folks could be doing anything with your time, and you're here with us. Thank you very much.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. We know that the deep dives like this aren't necessarily everybody's cup of tea. They are very much ours. So we're going to keep doing them, and for those of you that do like them, thank you so much.
Yes.
And if you are enjoying the show, go ahead and subscribe and review. It really helps us out, and we really enjoy it. And if you think someone else will enjoy the show, please share it with them.
Because word of mouth is the best way to spread that the Backassroots podcast has the definitive stance on Badge Man and the Umbrella Man. And you know, that the Backassroots stance is the only podcast that can give out definitive stances on the JFK assassination, because we're the only one who has taken the actual time and the actual work to actually accurately talk about this. So other podcasts about JFK, I'm joking, please, but you do know that the Backassroots podcast is your favorite podcast. I mean, come on.
Absolutely. You can listen to our previous episodes for more. I would recommend our episode on spontaneous human combustion.
Whoa, an absolute fucking throwback. This is the most recent episode of the podcast to come out. That was our 2nd episode.
Still one of my favorites.
It was a great episode.
Michael Black was our guest on that one. He's amazing. Shout out, Michael. Shout out, Michael. Want to have you on again soon if you're listening. Hit me up.
Yes, absolutely. Bring him on for an alien episode or something.
Yes.
God.
You can follow me and Arden on Twitter. I am at BackassWordKyle. Arden is at Arden_Smith. And you can follow the podcast on any of your favorite social medias on Twitter at BackassWordsPod, Instagram, BackassWordsPod, TikTok, BackassPod. On Facebook, just search the BackassWords Podcast. You can also join us over on Patreon. If you are really enjoying our show and you want to show us a little bit more love, you can throw us $1 a month. We'll shout you out on our podcast, and you get access to our Discord server as well. If you want even more bonus content, you can also join our $5 a month Manchurian Candidate tier and get access to the Wednesday Phenomena, our weekly bonus show.
The Wednesday Phenomena. It's a good time, folks. Come on over.
We have so much fun over there. Come and join us.
And we actually have quite a catalog built up for you folks now, so there's a lot to listen to.
I'm Kyle.
I'm Arden.
And we'll see you next week, unless you just get too many of them Coca-Colas in your system and have to do something absolutely crazy, like I'm actually not going to say so we don't get put on any kind of list.
Whoa.
But don't drink Coca-Cola, I guess, Arden. How many Diet Cokes you had today, Arden?
Like at least two or three. Like at least. Well, I had two during the last episode that we recorded, and just remember that you don't need to feel bad, because those habitual activities are coping mechanisms so that you can stay weird.
Just remember when you're having your multi times a day Diet Coke that the refined sugar in regular Coke is the real issue. The aspartame that you're getting in the Diet Coke is its own other issue, but it isn't going to make you kill the president. You're at least safe there so that you can stay weird.
Oh, dude. My dad told me the other day, he was like, I need to put a lock on the fridge with how many Diet Cokes you drink, dude. So... Oh, God. I'm 27 years old, folks. I have a Coca-Cola fucking problem, all right? See you next week.
It's the better Coke problem to have. We'll see you next week.
Whew. Emmy? Oh, no.
I've never felt more called out in my life.
No. Wait a minute, wait.